I suppose just to say I'm very much speaking with my consultant geriatrician hat on today as opposed to my other multiple hats at this point. And it follows, I think, very well, you know, what I suppose really kind of emerges from the discussions today is that everybody started on their various projects at a different place. Everybody, based on that, took a slightly different view as to what would work best within their own areas, and no more so than how things kind of worked from a Connolly Hospital and Dublin Northwest piece. Just, I suppose, to focus in terms of, and it kind of harks back to some of the data that Anne-Marie used, we were certainly able to look at some of our own INAD data, which is actually available to every centre who participated in INAD, the opportunity to go back and see what was actually happening. And it did reflect, you know, the fact that despite a lot of work that had been done around, you know, integrating care for older people and some of the initiatives that we were running through Connolly, you know, our outcomes for people with dementia were still, you know, poor overall. You know, our average length of stay was 18 days in 2014 under the INAD. We had, you know, much higher rates of discharge to long-term care facilities within the actual case notes of the reviewed patients as part of that. And we had, you know, high prescribing rates of antipsychotic medications. And, you know, when you ask people what are the main things that happen to people with dementia when they are admitted to hospital, you know, we do know that they get stuck. And I suppose I very firmly come from a background that says, yes, appropriate care in the appropriate place, but, you know, the emphasising that need to be able to transition people in and out of the acute hospital setting, I think, has to be seen as a key enabler in promoting good care for people with dementia. So Connolly is a HSE level 3 hospital, and as I like to say to Michael Fitzgerald and PJ, who worked with me in the HSE, we're pretty much the bog standard. So it's, and that isn't to take away, but it's very much, we're very much the standard model of care. It's an acute adult hospital. But I suppose, like that, what has been fundamentally happening in Connolly through a very supportive management structure, not on, just on the acute hospital side, but equally within community structure, has been that focus on developing pathways of care that actually allow people to transition, particularly from a Dublin Northwest point of view, much more easily through the system. But I suppose what you know, what happened in terms of INAD and just in terms of our own personal experiences, we knew that we really wanted to develop, you know, roles and expertise around the needs of the person with dementia. And in essence, you know, the Genio piece actually really kind of allowed us to kind of look at how we would actually do that. So in terms of looking at the services and structures that were there before this, you know, kicked off, certainly from about 2007, 2008, you know, there'd been a big focus, you know, within Connolly and Dublin Northwest at the development of pathways, for example, around nursing home liaison, with, you know, reasonable success in terms of being able to demonstrate that patients could be managed in alternate pathways more effectively. We were very fortunate in terms of having a specialist geriatric ward, a functioning day hospital over 5 days a week. We had very good access to psychiatry of older person services and other supports in the community. And just around 2013 then, we had, I suppose, focused on this case management approach, particularly for older people that we were encountering through either the day hospital or acute inpatients that had more complex needs. And then I suppose what we were very conscious of was actually making sure that whatever we're going to develop in terms of an integrated care pathway for dementia would actually sufficiently link in and not necessarily become an additional piece that somebody had to manage. And we felt that one of the kind of key places to kind of focus our energy in that regard was around what was happening from an ambulatory care piece, because so many of our structures were actually reflecting that need. And as part of a process mapping piece that we did in anticipation of the project, we were able to look at, for example, what was happening in terms of our day hospital assessments, use the feedback from service users, families, and the complaints department. And I would say any of you who are looking at service improvement projects in dementia care, your local risk department is actually a really, really important place to start. And then what was happening in terms of our own observation. And I suppose, like, we weren't cohorting this particular group of patients. You know, they were being seen in our general clinics. They were sometimes reviewed in different clinics depending on, what the flow of the workload was at different times. There was no written information given to either the person or their family. And if they didn't show up, which is actually a huge problem for people with dementia who now don't necessarily access the transport services that we used to have as part of our day hospital activity, a letter was sent to the GP to say, dear, such and such didn't show up, but no real kind of other follow-up in terms of what it is that might have been done to support that person. And we do know that there's substantial evidence to show that people who are actually missing appointments in some of these settings, their next port of call is actually the ambulance and into the ED when a crisis emerges. There was very little in the way of post-diagnostic dementia-specific supports and no formalised pathway for people with dementia. We were also conscious of the fact from a management point of view that there was a significant provision of one-to-one care being provided for inpatients in the hospital with dementia. And the complaints piece. So our, if you like, that was our local experience, and that was what we were trying to kind of focus on in terms of the actual project itself. So our kind of building blocks were very much, I suppose, similar to what Brian and Suzanne, and I'm struck by the way we actually kind of came to the table all pretty much saying the same thing, which means there must be something in it. It was, what was happening from an integration, a care integration point of view, how do you individualise care, and can you show that actually individualising care will actually have systemic benefits? And I think one of the key challenges we've had is actually trying to move this notion of person-centred care from being something that's niche and special to something that will actually have systemic dividends if deployed appropriately. And then looking at what educational initiatives could be deployed that would work across acute and community. And then an environmental piece that is probably taking a little bit longer, and we won't say it's getting there, but we have a bit of a way to go. So we focused in terms of the integration piece and I suppose in terms of the person-centred care piece on roles. And again, I'm very struck by, Suzanne and myself, we could have probably written the same project plan, but we didn't, in terms of our thoughts around this. I have to say, Susan, who's a clinical nurse specialist in dementia, who came on board in April 2015, and we really didn't kickstart until Susan actually came properly on board. There was a lot of groundwork, all right, being prepared. So that's why we're extended out until 2018. But, really that kind of fundamental leadership role in terms of driving the project and actually the care processes that have happened, it's a key piece. Based on our experience with the other case management roles, we did, much like Suzanne, look at having a community coordinator role. And I suppose reflective of maybe the climate that we have lived in, that has been a harder role to sustain purely in terms of people on maternity leave than having it difficulty. You really do need somebody who's actually going to be in that role to have ownership over a longer period. So the person who was in that role hasn't, there's been basically a gap in that role since August that we're looking to fill. But we're also, fundamentally looking at how that role was working with, for example, the other case management roles that were already in existence, and whether there was a need, for example, to look at maybe a more focused role, for example, with an allied health professional such as an occupational therapist who might be able to actually do some of the outreach and enabling piece that needs to happen in terms of the community and how that would look. And then it was very much around bolting it on to those other key pieces of the team that are already there. I must say we were very fortunate in getting great engagement from a consortium point of view through our own local hospital management and through the management team in the community, along with the other kind of key stakeholders and advisors. So very fortunate in having directors of nursing from private nursing home, palliative care representation, and other kind of key people to actually help navigate the pathways. But I think importantly for us, you know, this needed to be seen as part of a wider kind of project that built on the other elements of acute inpatient and outpatient care. So in terms of where we are at the moment, the consortium is in place, our CNS is in place. I'm going to talk a little bit about our ambulatory support, memory assessment and support service, what's been happening from an inpatient point of view, and then what the early indicators are in terms of our activity and whether or not we're having any success around culture change, which is really the big kind of bugbear that we're all kind of chasing. So our memory assessment and support service, again, operates, if you like, in two different ways. So we have, again, reflecting on the fact that we weren't cohorting our dementia care in general, and we felt this was something that really needed to happen. There is, if you like, a more elective piece to our memory assessment and support service that reflects, you know, very much a clinical assessment in terms of the diagnosis of dementia, which is nurse-led, and that comes very much through the GP referral route, and then a separate kind of part that reflects then engagement with one of us as a consultant and the CNS and disclosure of diagnosis with referral then to onward community supports, signposting services such as the ASI and the other supports that are there. Equally, I suppose, tallied with that, Susan has been running a really important and successful piece around a virtual clinic that actually provides that kind of phone and follow-up support that people actually need after a diagnosis has been disclosed. And I think, you know, increasingly with diagnosis of dementia, we're in a space that is beginning to recognise just what that actually means, and the follow-up and support that is needed for people after they've had their diagnosis. Equally, there's a part of that memory assessment and support service that is based on, I suppose, a more urgent ambulatory focus. And we did find that actually our community link was extremely helpful for this. But we're also very lucky in that we have other clinical case managers for older persons within the area who've been very kind of successful conduits for referrals. But this is very much, I suppose, focused on what you'd call an early supported discharge or an admission avoidance model. It very much, I suppose, relies on the early identification of delirium and dementia, and all of the clinical case managers, our own frailty nurses and ED staff are now trained in the identification of delirium. It's not, I suppose, been as systemically introduced, for example, in terms of the 4AAT that Suzanne is spoken about in terms of the Mercy, but that's certainly the path that we're on. And most of the staff, you'll have seen today, the cards that they've actually been issued with in terms of the pinch me tool, so that people with delirium can actually be identified and causes around their delirium can be excluded at an earlier point. But again, it's about how all of these elements actually work with each other. So for example, patients with complex behaviour in the nursing home, where you know, domiciliary assessment in the nursing home might be more appropriate, but equally, you know, our discharge coordinator has been a huge help to us in terms of people who have actually maybe moved through the system maybe a little bit more quickly than was necessarily in their interest, but very appropriately, and how they're followed up, for example, after a delirium episode. You know, we may have somebody who's gone home, for example, with outpatient antibiotic treatment under the OPAT scheme, but who needs a follow-up and a workup if we're actually going to be identifying what's actually happening with them from a delirium point of view post-discharge. I think fundamental to that has been that point of contact with the clinical nurse specialist. That often happens through a family member. And then, I suppose, again, because we've had the advantage of the day hospital being there, it's meant we can facilitate regular clinics to actually see these people. So in terms of, we looked basically at the experience that we'd had. I should say we had done a lot of groundwork in trying to actually get the slot for the memory service and things actually up and running before Susan's arrival, which meant, to be fair, she was really able to hit the ground up and running. And again, I would say to any of you who are interested in service improvement projects like this, there's a lot you can do in the background that actually kind of ploughs the ground for what needs to be done at a later base. I'm sorry, the numbers don't actually really come out very well there, but in the blue section there, about 40% of what we're actually seeing is from direct GP referral. And that's pretty significant in terms of, I suppose, what our routine and elective were. So we don't pull everybody into the clinic from a GP referral point of view. We pull people in where there's a specific diagnosis reflecting a memory concern. Then in terms of the other people that are seen, if you like, in terms of the rapid access pathway, we're looking at people who have either been seen or screened through the frailty service in the ED, or maybe they've been seen at home with a public health nurse and a clinical case manager and a crisis is emerging. Equally, an inpatient that's known to the service who's been admitted and we've discharged through an early supported discharge pathway. So it is about, I suppose it's different to other memory clinics, and I think it's probably a more appropriate model for a level 3 hospital like the one that we're in, as opposed to a very specialist service. What I would say is that having a service like this actually coordinate and cohort the care of people with dementia has been really helpful in terms of how we do need to access specialist assessment when it's needed in other centres, and allowed us, for example, if research or other elements are happening, to be able to tie in with that. So I do think it's an area that we really need to look at in terms of our acute hospital model of care. I suppose the other thing that really is clearly emerging for us in terms of the two groups that we're seeing, even within the elective referrals, is a group of people who are the new diagnoses. They tend to be a bit younger, have higher functional levels, less comorbidity, but have a lot of emotional supports around their diagnosis and their future care planning. Versus those who have very kind of established dementia, cognitive impairment, and about half of these were not previously known to services. So that's on the basis of clinically or patients who were referred from an elective point of view. And we've got a data set now established to monitor the longer term experience with services in this particular caseload. And again, I suppose part of the opportunity around the actual project itself has been to be able to look at these things in a more systematic way. I think in terms of our learning in terms of the urgent care pathway, it's been very much looking at, well, what was new? What did we do differently, or what did we add to the story for the person who was referred typically at a time of crisis? So that's about 80 people who fit that bracket, which relatively small numbers, but I suppose about 8 to 10 people a month, if you like, since we started in February. And again, what I would say is that I think to me reflects the fact that, we're not talking about a huge ask, but I think these are the patients that you really want to actually transition through the system, quite quickly in terms of your acute hospital stay, in order to avoid, I suppose, some of the deleterious effects of a prolonged hospital stay that we heard about earlier. So, a lot of people were referred clearly in time of what I would call a more social care crisis, and how that might be addressed. But equally, a carer who was having a crisis of their own, and for multiple different reasons. It might be because of a change in the person with dementia, but equally because of health issues of their own. And that's becoming an increasing issue. We're managing couples as opposed to people with dementia a lot of the time now. And again, about half of the people that we were actually seeing in the mass service had a previously known diagnosis of dementia. So they were actually being tracked and picked up as being, I suppose, cognitively vulnerable, to use Suzanne's phrase, and pulled in that way. The outcome then in terms of those referrals then, specifically, I suppose there's been a huge medication piece. We are trying to enhance our AHP services because, again, I think there are fundamental roles that support these people. But I think equally important to say, you know, the other pathways that were there were able to kind of take up some of what needed to be taken up. So community intervention team, for example, for people, we've had three people, not specific to the programme, but who had end-of-life care at home as part of the part of their end-stage dementia care, with support from the case management piece and the palliative care team. Equally, we had people who were progressed, you know, very appropriately through Fair Deal. We had people that we needed to admit to acute hospital once they were actually seen in the clinic. I think in terms of the person-centred element, we are actually introducing the course of the plan for 2017 is around the introduction of the full dementia care bundle. But I think our experience even within the short time has been around the introduction of the personal passport. And I think that very important engagement that Susan has had with the teams on the wards and the acute inpatient wards. And again, that has been hugely supported, you know, by hospital management. But I think, you know, we're certainly, we've locally seen a reduction in the use of one-to-one care since 2014. Now, actually, I don't think that for a minute that that's necessarily driven by the change in the pathway per se, but I think what it has meant, what having the clinical lead nurse in dementia has meant is we've been able to do that in a much more supported way, and that people understand what's happening with the person with dementia much more appropriately. And I suppose, you know, just to focus on that, there's been very good qualitative work looking at the interaction of staff with the personal passport. So it's, you know, it's a tool. It needs to be used in conjunction with the other initiatives. But there's been a huge amount of engagement with families, with staff around how it's actually been introduced, and the evaluation's been very positive. And you can pick up the tool at the post. Again, our educational approach has been very much multidimensional across acute and community. We found the use of whiteboard sessions, very kind of focused micro-teaching sessions on wards around specific areas of dementia care, really helpful. And then I suppose one final thing that we have focused on has been a telementoring support service to the local nursing homes. It's interprofessional, it's case-based with didactic learning. Each nursing home hosts its own case. I'm very fortunate some of our directors are here today, and it helps from that point of view. So, I mean, look, RCNS piece has been a really kind of pivotal role, but it is part of a much bigger team. But I wouldn't, you know, underemphasize the importance of us having kind of roles that can focus on really important work like this. You know, in terms of where we've been in around supporting the patient journey in the community and improving the acute inpatient experience, we've really tried to align what's happening in one place versus the other. And I've noticed boards being flashed all over me. I'll very quickly say, you know, it is. We are trying to make sure that what we're doing is aligned with the integrated care framework for somewhere present. This is the last slide. It's not just a project. It's more of a movement. And, you know, I think, you know, I think what we've heard from today is that our care for people with dementia really reflects our core care culture, and getting it right is really, really, you know, has to be where it's at. That the organisational support is key to unlocking and driving culture of change, and we've been really fortunate about that in terms of our relationships. And I do think it's about trying to reflect the systemic dividends that come from a person-centred approach. I have to say, you know, Susan has been a huge driver as part of a much broader team. And, you know, the work, I suppose, that we're showing is very much reflective of the ownership that has been taken in that regard.
Thank you.